Welcome to Entrepreneurs the Playbook. I'm David Meltzer, and I have a treat for you. He is the CEO of Silicon Slopes and CEO.com, two of the greatest platforms that are influencing, impacting, and empowering the greatest leaders in our country to align with my mission of making a lot of money for the sake of helping others and having fun. The incredible Clint Betts, welcome to the Playbook.
Thank you so much, David. What an honor to be here.
It's such an honor to interview you because everything you do is so aligned with my values. You have such gratitude in everything that you do with CEO.com. If anyone's ever been and participated in any of the events at Silicon Slopes, it's just oozing gratitude. People are so positive. They're finding light, love, and lessons in everything that's going on in both of those organizations and platforms, but also the values of empathy and accountability, but most importantly to me, inspiration. I was curious to start off because you empower and inspire so many people. What empowers and inspires you?
Honestly, what empowers and inspires me are people who show up and give more than they take. And I think we've kind of lost this in society along the way at some point. I kind of learned those values, those two values from my grandpa. He was a farmer. We grew up in rural Utah. And the main things that he would always say to me is show up and give more than you take. He'd harvest corn and potatoes, and he'd go around the neighborhood and drop off free bags of potatoes and corn to people in the neighborhood who were struggling or needed it and things like that. And so he lived those values, and he became my hero. I dress like him. That more than anything is what inspires me. When I see those two things happening within an individual, I just feel like, wow, that's somebody I want to know. I want to be a part of. And you are that, David. Yeah, that is who you are. You are someone who shows up and gives more than they take.
And I've learned a valuable lesson, Clint. It's so interesting you say give more than you take, because I believe undoubtedly that the more we give, the more we'll receive. But I also have learned the more we give, the more we're given, and we need to receive. A lot of people that are very generous, I'll use our first responders, our United States veterans, our teachers, single moms, these people are giving their lives, but they have a difficulty receiving. And that's different than taking. And I always say what makes receiving so interesting is giving is aligned with the divine, in the respect that when we're able and capable of helping others, we're closest to God. And so if we are offered something or we need help from somebody that's able and capable of helping us, we should receive it, because we're actually giving probably the best gift we could give to someone. The gift of being able and capable of helping us allows them to feel their highest self, to be closest to God. Have you struggled or have any insight on the distinction between taking and the blessing of receiving?
I struggle with this every day, right? Like you want to be the one who doesn't ever need anything from anyone, right? You want to be the one who is totally self-dependent, self-reliant, can do everything on his own. I don't need any help. Let me just give. Let me just give. Let me just give. I think you put that perfectly, in that receiving is completely different than taking. And what I've come to learn over the years is if you don't receive, you're denying someone the ability to give, right? You're denying them that unique and, like you said, divine opportunity to give. And so you do have a responsibility to receive, is what I've kind of learned over the years. Like you should take, like, because if you are not receiving, then you're denying someone, their divine ability to give. And all of this only works if you're giving more than you take and you're being willing to receive.
That's so beautifully put. And you do so much, you know, looking through your bio and just the fact of CEO.com and Silicon Slopes, and both have put Utah on the map as a nationally recognized hub for entrepreneurship and innovation. And you have contributed as a catalyst, at the very least, and a leader in your state, for literally hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue to pour into your state and our country by creating an opportunity through CEO.com and, of course, Silicon Slopes. I want to start with CEO.com. What impact has CEO.com had on our community as far as giving options and opportunity and touches of favor with its platform?
Well, CEO.com is really focused around this idea that they're actually like pretty similar communities and similar ecosystems, but Silicon Slopes is obviously directly and entirely focused solely on Utah, whereas CEO.com is a global platform for leaders, right? And so that's really kind of like the difference. And we interview CEOs of Fortune 500 companies and folks like you and just these incredible CEOs around on CEO.com for our podcast and newsletter and all of the stuff that we do there. We have a league, a CEO league, where we have a bunch of CEOs who kind of come together and talk to each other once a month and things of that nature. I think the thing that makes CEO.com unique is kind of building off of what we just talked about, but we talk a lot about chances. And the chances you give are just as important as the chances you take, right? It's the way we end every interview for the CEO.com, the hundreds of interviews we've done. We end every interview with that question: who gave you a chance to get you to where you are today? And talking about that and pushing on that, I was recently in Vanuatu, which is a small island right outside of Fiji, where we helped them bring internet, hardwired internet, to this remote island, which had never didn't have before. They had cell phones and data and things of that perspective, but we actually built a building and we brought hardwired internet where the community could come and learn and pay their bills and become entrepreneurs, most importantly, right? And we helped them from Vanuatu, this remote island, get mentors globally through the CEO.com community to help them start their business. Now they're selling things. They're selling things that they make in their house. They're selling travel there. You know, like the businesses are probably somewhat rudimentary to some, you know, some might not think, but they're getting mentors that they never would have gotten before because of that. And so that's kind of the ethos of CEO.com, is give more chances than you take. And just the overall importance of leadership. I believe there's a crisis of leadership in this country and in the world. And if we could solve that crisis of leadership, then I think a lot of the issues and major challenges and divisions we face today would actually go away, right? And it starts with giving more chances than you take as a leader.
And obviously, you're an icon for leadership, both in CEO.com and Silicon Slopes, but a lot of people have different definitions of leadership. Do you have a definition of leadership? And if so, what is that?
It's creating something that wouldn't have been possible without you, right? So creating an opportunity, creating an experience, creating a company, creating a community, creating all of that type of stuff. And obviously you don't create anything alone. So a great leader understands that, one, if you can't lead yourself, you can't lead others. So first you got to think about how you're leading yourself.
Yeah.
And the type of values that you hold, the principles that you hold, what you do is who you are, all of those types of principles, right? And then what can you uniquely create, given that you matter and you matter just as much as anyone else? No one matters more than you and you don't matter more than anyone else. It's like the model that I live by, again, taught to me by my grandpa. No one matters more than you. You don't matter more than anyone else, but you got to show up into rooms as though you matter. And this is something that we're working a lot. We're doing this thing at Silicon Slopes called Start School, where we're helping, we have 400 companies in this program. We're helping companies and entrepreneurs learn how to be an entrepreneur in the age of AI. How do you do all of this now that, you know, there might be, you know, jobs are going away? What type of jobs are going to exist in the future and those types of things? And the one thing that has really struck me as we've been doing this for the past few months is just kind of the confidence gap that exists. And this, and something that we stress over and over and over again is like, hey, you belong here. You don't need to fight for to be in a room that you're already in. You belong here. You matter. You have a unique perspective. And I think a leader's job is to draw that out in people, let them know that, you know, hey, I'm not more or less than you, right? And, but really, I think what leadership comes down to is creating something and showing up again in a certain way where otherwise, were you not part of it, it would have had a different outcome.
Is there a common denominator that you see of leaders? Is there one characteristic that every leader has?
Well, this is a fascinating question for me and something that I actually think about a lot. I would actually love to hear your perspective on this because there's so many different leadership styles, right? You've got like the Steve Jobs leadership style, yeah. Right? Which is like, it sounds like he was just like a huge asshole, right? But also like the greatest entrepreneur. Yeah, just like, yeah, exactly right. And, but it worked, right? Yeah. There's no question that it worked. And then you have these more empathetic leaders, right? And you have more compassionate leaders and folks like David Meltzer, right? Who, it couldn't be more opposite, but that also works. And so what is the commonality between these things? And how do, leaders, what kind of drives them? And what I've kind of thought about through that, and I don't know if it's true, is like they will not allow themselves to fail. I think it's like, I will not fail no matter what, whether you're the dick and you shouldn't do business with dick or whether you're the compassionate leader. I think both have this insatiable desire and will to ensure that they don't fail and the people around them don't fail. That's the only kind of commonality that I've really seen throughout the various spectrums.
Yeah, we have the same definition, just so you know. I say it as every leader has one. I've been with, the billionaires, millionaires, entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, entertainers at the highest level, and they all have a desire that they must be what they can be. And they have, in order to have that, by the way, they have to have faith. And my struggles came when I lost my faith, and they have grown as so has my faith. And so I'd love to ask you in a non-denominational way, the way that I speak about faith so that everybody feels included. Cause I believe as long as you believe in something bigger than you that loves you more than your mom, you got some faith in something, things are going to be okay. But in that aspect of a desire that you must be what you can be, how important is faith for a leader?
I think it's critical. I think it's critical. By the way, I think we're all leaders. I think we're all CEOs in some respect. Like, nice. We're all like these types of things. And so when I think about that, I think like
people are just interfering with it, right? That's my philosophy.
That's exactly right.
We all are. We're just interfering with it.
Yeah, we're all leaders. I don't love the message where, get VCs or various folks saying like, oh, leadership might not be for you or anything, things like that. Mm. It's like, no, like this is a fundamental human principle. So to answer your question, I went through maybe a somewhat similar struggle that you went through. I spent the first couple of years of my life in foster care, actually. My biological mother, she suffered from schizophrenia. My biological father was actually institutionalized for alcoholism. So I spent the first couple of my years in foster care. And then when I was adopted, I spent most of my childhood and teenage years feeling like I wasn't good enough because somebody had given me up. Right? I'd been given up. Nobody wanted me, And so I really struggled with this, not being good enough mentality for a very long time. I grew up in a very, as you might imagine, given that I live in and have grown up in the state of Utah, I grew up in a very religious community. And it was always part of, but I never really thought about that as much as like, I'm just not good enough. Like that didn't really help me all that much through my childhood and teenage years. And then when I got on my own, I shunned it. Honestly, I went like the other way. I'm like, all right, so I'm not going to deal with any of that. And it really hurt me, I think, in my development. And it's only as I've come to understand the importance of this. And I read scriptures every day now. I got a scripture, right? Yeah, like it's so much and fundamentally in part of who I am and how I ground myself and knowing that there's somebody or something that's bigger than I am, that there's a purpose behind all of this. It's fundamentally important, but it's a real struggle. It was a real struggle for me to go through that journey and go through that childhood of being adopted, having a rather rough childhood even after being adopted. We weren't a rich family. We weren't, it was, my dad was a janitor, my mom was a preschool teacher. And so it was a very difficult environment where not only did you feel like, hey, nobody wanted me when I was first born, but as you look around, like everybody's more successful than you or your family. And how do you navigate that? Does that mean that you're not good enough? Does that mean that you're not successful? And I really struggled with this whole identity thing. Like for I would say for like the first 25 years of my life, my identity was adopted. That was my identity. Oh, wow. You know what I mean? And like that's no good place to be in. And and so to me, it's everything. Answer your question.
Yeah, it's beautiful. You know, the ego has such a need to defend and to control and to prove ourselves. And these life traumas can really impact the way we see ourselves. And we can't find outside of us what we're not seeing inside of us, as you talk about in being a leader and being able to see that leadership inside of us, which is so tremendous. Before I get to the last question, which I've been saving up, Silicon Slopes Tech Summits. You have really expanded different types of opportunities for venture capitals, venture capitalists, founders, innovators. Give me an idea of what type of opportunity that we have to participate in the Silicon Slope Tech Summits.
Well, it's become kind of like this global tech conference. Like when we started Silicon Slopes is a 501c3 nonprofit. And when we started it in 2015, nobody knew that Utah even had a tech ecosystem, right?
Right.
Like, and our struggle was...
Except for Randy Garn. He's the only one that knew.
Randy Garn knew, for sure. Yeah. It's so funny you know Randy Garn. I love Randy Garn.
Everybody knows. He's the Mormon Meltzer.
Yeah, that's right. That's a great way to put him. Yeah, I love you, Randy Garn. I believe he's out in Texas right now. The thing that we wanted to do when we first started the organization is bring attention, right, to the fact that there was this very strong tech community that that existed in Utah. We needed to attract talent from around the world, because if there was a time, not in the not too distant future or past, where if you took a job at a Utah tech company and it didn't work out, you had to leave Utah altogether, right? And we wanted to, explain to talent, or as we were recruiting talent to the state of Utah, like, hey, there's a lot of tech companies here, so if it doesn't work out here, you could still stay in Utah, and Utah's this very beautiful place to live and to work and all of that type of stuff, right? And so that was a challenge. And then the third challenge for us was capital. You used to always have to go to Silicon Valley to get venture capital or to get your business funded. And it wasn't really until Omniture sold to Adobe for $1.8 billion, and Adobe opened a big office here in the state of Utah because of that, that I think Utahns realized, hey, you can get a Silicon Valley exit without having to live in Silicon Valley. And obviously $1.8 billion at this point, it like, sounds like nothing, but this was 2009. It's a huge deal, right? It still is a huge deal. Let's be completely.
I tell people that with my $3.4 billion exit in 95. I go, $3.4 billion was a lot in 1995. Yeah.
It's so funny that those numbers are small now. And so Summit was like the culmination of that. Is like, let's build a global tech conference that just happens to be in Utah. We've had folks like Zuckerberg, Tim Cook, Shantanu, Satya Nadella, Tony Robbins. And the list goes on and on and on. Liz Wiseman, who's obviously, I love Liz Wiseman.
Amazing.
And she's always the top rated speaker whenever we get her. Like, she's incredible.
Oh, that's so
I want to make sure that I shout her out as well. And now it's like become like this place where entrepreneurs and VCs and leaders kind of come together. We had Mark Cuban this year, and we had the director of Medicaid from the Trump administration. And they sat down, and obviously, like Mark Cuban, obviously probably no big Trump guy, and you have the director of Medicare, Chris Klump, and we had a discussion about healthcare for an hour and a half, and they debated it, and they talked about it. And then, you know, you see a couple months later, Mark Cuban is at a press conference with Trump, talking about one of Trump's programs, Trump RX, I believe, something like that, and ways that they can work together and align. And so The beauty of it is the convening power that it now has, bringing people together. And then you don't really control what happens once the event's over. And that to me has been what's been kind of the beauty of it. And I think it's what attracts people, so many people to Utah every year.
Yeah, well, I will tell you, as someone who speaks on 200 stages a year, it's the highlight of my career being, I think I was between Ed Milet and Eric Trump or Donald Jr., I forget which one, but it is the who's who. And if you haven't been, you must, it's a must attend. And I look forward to attending again.
Yeah, we've got to get you back out, man.
A great community. All right, last question. I don't always ask this question last, but I thought it was apropos. Who gave you your chance?
Oh, man. You know what's funny is I've never been asked this.
Right on.
I do. I ask this every single day.
I took a chance.
Yeah. I would say this might be a kind of, and I hope I don't get emotional thinking about it, but like I mentioned to you before, I spent the first couple of years in foster care. I actually ended up meeting my biological mother when I was 15 years old at a Sizzler in Provo, Utah. That's where I met her. And I had spent my, up until that point and up until meeting her, and even after, if we're just being completely honest, like thinking like she'd given me up. She didn't want me. I wasn't good enough for her. And then when I met her, and I always, like, my intention was always to ask her, why did you give me up? And I actually never did. I never asked her why she gave me up, because what I came to realize is that she'd given me a chance. She'd given me a chance at a life that she otherwise wouldn't have been able to provide. And I, once like that kind of hit, and it's why I asked the question. It's actually the story behind why I asked that question. And I think my biological mother is the one who gave me a chance. And me and my brother were both adopted. We both spent he's 2 years older than me. We both spent our first years in foster care together. She passed away from throat cancer maybe 8 or 9 years ago. And we were at her bedside, me and my brother. And the last thing I said to her, I kissed her on the cheek and I said, thanks for the chance, Mom. That's the last thing I said to her. And so there are a lot of people in my life who have given me a chance. I mean, it's, you know, you could go on and on and on. But that one for me, she gave me a life that I otherwise would not have been able to get.
Thank you for your vulnerability and transparency. Thank you for touching all of us with the mindset, the heart set, and the handset necessary to live with passion, purpose, and profitability. CEO.com and Silicon Slopes, changing not only Utah, but our entire world, from tiny little countries in Fiji that I've never heard of to Provo, Utah. It doesn't matter. Bringing the right people with the right ideas together, people who want to help each other and know people that help each other. And I want to personally thank Clint Betts for always being so gracious and helping me building my brand, my community, and my career. We've been doing stuff for a lot of years together, and you have had a great impact in giving me a chance. And here we are together, mutual chances to help promote each other and help each other. God bless you, Clint Betts. My name's Dave Meltzer, and this is Entrepreneurs, the Playbook.